I would do video, but I just remembered I'm in pajamas.
Oh, Jesus. 9 o'clock
just...
at night in pajamas.
Oh my god, I'm so horrible!
I'm in pajamas as well.
I mean, just control your camera position. I could be wearing zero pants right now. You're not gonna know.
Oh wow.
I have at least some pants on, just for the record.
Oh my god.
Are you
okay,
still...
I gotta go, I'm brewing tea, so...
Player 2 Pixelcast episode 9. My name Tim Henderson is, and I am so tired I want to die. I was going to write an intro, but I am so tired I want to die. I was going to have a happier voice, but I'm so tired I want to die.
It's a pretty good intro, though.
I'm sensing a theme!
Thankfully, still some alive and well, despite having, you know, like children and stuff, so I don't know how he's surviving. Ken! You're
hello.
You're like perky-ish.
Perky-ish, yes.
Well, we don't have a video feed, so I have to guess.
Well, I am in my pajamas. I'm like full-on, like, dad pajamas.
This t-shirt is actually effectively my pajamas, so we're kind of on the same level. I got old enough to the point where the anime t-shirts became just in the house clothes. But joining us also, we have... the monstrous tea drinker.
What?
I don't know, I'm tired. You're like, you're living on the edge.
Tired, man.
You're living on the edge, you're drinking
bad.
Tea.
Yes.
He's just saying you drink tea and that you're a monster, it's alright.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You're
it's
a monster
it's
for
fine,
tea.
I'm a horrible human being with
for
a treasure
tea.
Goblin who happens to sleep through the night, so screw you all.
I love that description of your child, by the way.
I'm caffeinating because I don't care anymore. My child is a crawl around the place little monster, so, you know, let's make things interesting.
Oh, I got it wrong. You're not the monster. Your child is the monster. Check.
Goblin.
And yeah,
treasure goblin.
I'm not going to try with this anymore for like fear of humiliating myself further. We also have Adam.
Hi, everyone.
Man. I don't know.
I have a story behind me that will remain a mystery.
He likes to ask very obscure questions about game cartridges.
Chuck Norris of the Player 2 Pixelcast.
Does he have his own fact website? I mean, Chuck Norris is kind of like on the right track here because we are going to be talking about video game movies, which is probably roughly on par with most of Chuck Norris's body
of
work.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same kind of train wreck, yeah.
Sometimes more fun, sometimes less. They're sometimes fun for exactly the wrong reasons, and then you get obsessed with them, like the entire internet does for like 5 years. Let's get this going in old to new order, which means, Sarah, you've been playing one of my favorite PS2 games on the system that probably most belongs on.
Yeah, Final Fantasy XII. I got the port because I'd started playing the PS4 port whenever it came out, thinking, oh, this is going to be great and fantastic. And I got about halfway through before, I can't remember if it was Ni No Kuni 2 or if it was Dragon Quest XI or something else came out, and I went, I really got to kind of go different direction.
Ni No Kuni 2 is pretty good as well.
But
just going to put that out there.
I went and traded in the PS4 version for the Switch version for a couple of very good reasons. Number one, duh, it's portable. But also...
You mean you don't need a high-res 4K extra bloom effects version of a 10-year-old game?
No, it's like 30 FPS and 60 FPS in the menus. Who gives a shit? I don't care. But the best part is, you see, when it comes to JRPGs, I'm a monumental F-up when it comes to actually doing jobs and ability points. The Switch and the Xbox versions let you reset, which I desperately need because I will screw this up so many times it isn't funny and it will take me about a year.
Wait, that's a PS4 non-available feature? That sounds very weird.
It was not available on the PS4 version, and I can't find any evidence that after this Xbox and Switch version has actually come out that they've actually patched it. So,
you can't reset it.
I checked because I went, oh, I wonder if I could do that. No, you can't. You can't. So I went, stuff it. I got the Switch version because I know that I am going to ruin my life if I don't do that. It has some other kind of nice perks that, you know, probably there were a few that were in the PS4 version originally that I didn't take advantage of because idiot. Things such as kind of going 2x, 4x speed, that kind of thing in order to grind, which I really should have done. But it also has, like, you know, a little bit of an additional soundtrack, you know, variation, things like that, and that's about it. But it is so nice to play on the Switch. It really is. And, like, if it's docked, it's really no different. You know, there aren't that many much differences, but I don't know how the hell they compressed it down to 13 gigs on the Switch, because it was about double that on the previous port that they'd
probably
done.
Less than half of that in the PS2, yeah. So...
Mm.
Yeah.
They probably just dumbed down the graphics, but subtly. Like, textures is a big thing that they do. So if they can, like, tone down the textures, like, that dramatically decreases the amount of space you need.
Yeah. So I figured they did something like that, but I'm enjoying my second time around. And look, to be honest, for people who are not as obsessed as I am, you could probably get away with still keeping your PS4 version or your PS2 version if you want to, but PS2 doesn't have your fun Zodiac age system.
Also, it's like 2 hours between save points at some point, which is the sole reason I never actually finished that game.
I know. So, and I've got the PS2 version sitting there collecting dust. I'm like, ah, no. But... to be honest, this version, the things that you get on the Switch, you are getting on the Xbox as well. So, like, if you've got an Xbox, you still get the same kind of gameplay improvements that the Switch one's got, which is great. But if you already have the PS4 version and you think that you're not going to mess it up that much or just genuinely don't care, you probably could just keep it. I'm just pedantic.
But, yeah, playing on the train is nice.
Yeah, or just taking it over when I'm heading over to my mum's place to look after Treasure Goblin and stuff. It's great to kind of just, you know, be able to sit and, you know, they can sit and watch, do whatever the heck they're doing,
watching.
Yeah, that. And I can put the headphones in and I can play my Switch. And it's cool.
And it's cool.
Here ended the TED Talk.
It is cool. All right. Before we start sounding too much like Cartman. Ken, you've actually been playing something that I had originally had portable aspirations for. Failed because I was playing my Surface and I couldn't read the fucking text without, like, holding my, like, Surface, like, right up my face. Is Sunless Sea readable yet?
No. It's not. So...
It's honest. He's honest.
It's still... Sucks. So, yeah, I mean, you talked Sunless Sea. Sarah and Adam, are you familiar with Sunless Sea?
No.
Nope.
So this is a very interesting game. It's legitimately interesting. It's the premise is that London has sunken into the entire country of England has sunk, and it's in this sort of underworld, surrounded by water, and London is an island now, and all the cities are islands and things like that. And you've got this it's very sort of Cthulhu-esque underworld with sea monsters and its own weird little mythology of being in the underground. And you're a boat. It's a top-down game where you travel from island to island collecting stories. Essentially, you just go up to each island, you talk to, and everything is text boxes, right? Everything is text boxes.
Hence the not being able to read it being a problem.
Yeah, and you pick up weird people with bugs for eyes, like
yeah, that's kind of cool.
And you speak to a lady who's standing at the edge of a beach, just waiting for someone to return. And it's all this sort of very dark, very grim, very Cthulhu mythos type of stories. And you're traveling around the sea, the undersea, just exploring. I mean, there's a little bit of combat, a little bit of real-time combat, and it's quite interesting. But primarily, the game is all about exploration, and it's a tiny little boat that you control from a top-down perspective. It's got a bit of a steampunk theme to it as well. So imagine all of that—just dark, grimy. The technology is sort of like Victorian era. Imagine if Victorian era
kind
England had sunk,
sort of
kind of steampunky, kind of Cthulhu-esque. It's just a weird world, and it's delightful. It's yeah. so uplifting.
Delightful is the word I would use.
You know what makes you a good reviewer, Ken? I'm listening to you describe this game, and I'm like, shit, I kind of want to play that now. I'm just like, that sounds really cool.
It is actually really cool. And there is a bit of almost a roguelike element to it. So the world is difficult. Your captain will die. But you can leave a legacy for your next captain. So my first captain, I'm playing this for the second time. I played it a long time ago, and there have been a bunch of patches and balances and updates and things like that. The game is quite old. It's about 3.5-4 years old now, so it can probably run on any computer at this point. Nice. It's available on PC. I can't remember if it's available on any other platform.
It would fit on an iPad pretty well.
I think it would work on an iPad really, really well. And, you know, you've got ship. Your ship has fuel. You've got supplies. Your crewmates are gradually gain terror as you are exploring the sea, and you don't find safe harbor for people to decompress after an emotionally trying time. You're gonna see weird sea creatures. You're gonna see unsettling things. You're gonna hear unsettling stories. You're gonna pick up secrets about the world, and your captain will die. And so, you know, my first captain's background, and you get to sort of create your captain's background. My first captain was a priest who fell out of who left the religious order and decided to want to become an explorer, and my first captain died. So my second captain has a legacy. My second captain is a rival. And then you get to pick. So is your second captain, your third, fourth? How is it related to the captain that just died? Is it a rival? Is it a progeny? Is it the mentor? Is it a student of the one that just passed? So my second captain I created is a rival of my first captain. And I've created a whole other story. It's a street urchin and just wants to make money. So you've got all these like weird things, and there's a lot of, it's very text heavy too. Everything that happens in the world, stories are told to you via text. So you've got to read pages after pages of text, which is fine because again, the game it's about exploration. So it's actually quite slow paced. You get to explore at your leisure. And the only thing that's restricting you is your supplies and your fuel. And if you've got the money to buy it, you can keep on sailing. It's really quite an experience. I'm probably going to do a player two plays video for this sometime soon. Yeah. And so y'all can check it out.
You should stream that stuff.
Because that's a whole other thing I still haven't figured out.
It is. It's honestly, guys, if anyone who wants to get in the stream, it's like, oh, you think it's easy. And then your software breaks on you 1 hour before you have to go live. And you're like, oh, all out the window. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's a whole other question. Yeah, so it's pretty amazing, and there's a sequel called Sunless Skies, which is
a very great name. It's set in space, where all of the suns are, quite literally.
Yeah, so it's worth a try.
Yeah, I see why they call it Sunless Skies. So you have to kind of keep the brand recognition. Anyway, Adam, Mortal Kombat. Violence.
Yes. So I have been playing Mortal Kombat 11. And from a fighting game perspective, this is probably one of the best fighting games to be produced in recent times. So for those who probably don't know, there was actually a big gap where we didn't really have any. So you'd have the occasional, like, maybe obscure title, but nothing that was ever going to go gangbusters and nothing that was ever really that special.
Pre-2008, basically.
Oh, yeah, and then just boom, it just seems like every year we've had like a major release, in some years two, some years three. It's been amazing. Like this year, what have we had? We've had a few remasters come out, but we also had Soul Calibur 6, I think.
That was last year.
Tekken 7. Soul Calibur 6 was this year.
Yeah, Tekken 6.
Tekken 7. Fight.
Soul Calibur 6 was Christmas last year.
Was it Christmas? Oh, God, I reviewed that and everything. Okay, so that was Christmas, and I seem to have missed that part. This year, like, we're getting the new Samurai Showdown game as well.
Yes, that looks good.
And what just obviously came out, Mortal Kombat 11, we'll go back to that. So, I mean, what they've done, the systems that they've put in place, they've really, really, really thought about. And I could really go into some depth here, but it'd probably be boring for most of the listeners right now. But let's just say, let's just take one thing from Street Fighter V, what it did. It introduced this thing called crush counters. Now, what crush counters meant is that if you got a counter hit, which means that if I hit a button and in my startup frames you've hit me with, like, say, a heavy punch, it crush counters me. Now, what that does is does more damage and does more, like, hit stun for me, which means that you can follow it up with another combo. Now, sounds really good on paper until you see it time and time again. Then it kind of, like, it punishes people for hitting buttons, but it makes it really too goddamn easy to follow up. It was something that I kind of ended up hating about Street Fighter V after a while. They've done a very similar concept system in Mortal Kombat 11, but it has to meet specific conditions. And the specific conditions don't pop up a lot. So you might see it once per game, like that one crush counter, I think it's called Fatal Blows or whatever they call it. You might see one a game. And because you only see one a game, it's very special. So you're like, oh, he landed that enhanced move three times in one whole match. And on the fourth time, that's when it does like the big one. So you only see it once. So therefore, it's actually special. So it could also be something that they're maybe trying to set up at the start instead of like you might see it like every second hit. And it's just like, oh, cool. And then like on the third one, like, okay, yeah, I get it. It's just happening. And there is many systems like that in the game where they've taken concepts of current fighting games and just made them better by thinking about them, by obviously play testing it and just seeing like, how can we make this more technical? Another thing that they went back and did is that, say, Mortal Kombat 9 and 10 were very rushed down. So you had a run button, and the whole purpose was like you knock someone down, you race up and you throw a 50-50. The 50-50 was either I'm going to hit you with an overhead, I'm going to throw, or I'm going to like hit you with just a normal thing. It's like, I need you to maybe either be pressing a button or blocking low or blocking high. And you're not going to know what it is. Hence the term 50-50. It's like your turn to guess. And that was the whole point of the game. Some people really liked that system. I personally didn't. I'm more of a footsie based thing, and I kind of hate the element of guessing in fighting games. Like, put them in a position where you've earned it, but like not every single goddamn knockdown. That's just boring to me. So they've gone back to a real footsie based fighting system, and a lot of people saying it's slower, but no one's complaining about it. It's been out for, what, 2-3 weeks now?
Yeah.
And most people are saying, like, no, this is actually really goddamn good. It's more technical. It's more of a spacing fighting games. Like, I'm looking for my opening, There it is, bang. And even the combos, like, people are always coming out with new, big, devastating combos. They're not as damaging as they were in the Mortal Kombat 10. Or X. So, I mean, this game is just absolutely phenomenal. And yes, let's talk about the elephant in the room. It is hideously violent. And I find it so goddamn funny. Most of them I find funny. There is the occasional fatality or brutality where I go, oh, no. Like, but it's kind of meant to do that. And it's one of those things where I can remember the first Mortal Kombat, and I saw it in an arcade, and I was watching Raiden fight someone else, some guy fight this other guy, and he did this fatality. I had no idea what to expect. So he's fired this electricity into his opponent's head, and then his opponent's head exploded, and I was goddamn horrified. I lost my biscuits. I was pretty young at the time. I look at that now, and most people look at that now, and they go, oh, you know, it's like it's not even remotely real. And I kind of feel like that's it is setting new standards for gore and all that sort of stuff, but I'm also now the kind of person that can sit down and watch an old school horror movie and be like, oh, and it's like your reaction is to look at it and laugh because of its absolutely over the top obscurity and not to be like, oh God, like it's a very different reaction. And I can see why some people have that reaction because like they are getting very good with the realism, but it's so silly and over the top. It's like, to me, it's just like a horror film. It's like, oh, he throws this in there and that explodes and he can rip this arm off. And it's like, oh God, yeah, as if, right?
Yeah. Well, see, I do have an issue with the violence
yep.
because I really enjoyed Mortal Kombat 9.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the resurgence of the current generation of Mortal Kombat.
It was. Yeah, it was.
I couldn't play 10. I just got ill. I got really very uncomfortable as a whole.
You know what would mess me up? And this would actually be the greatest joke fatality ever. If like there's one character and I just did a close up of like another character's finger and he gave him a paper cut in exquisite detail.
No. He's just like holds his hand open. He's like shink all the way through. Ah, God.
No, and I actually, I mean, this might sound weird, but I this is kind of actually why I like the Injustice games, yep. Because it's the Mortal Kombat system, and I'm like, I wish the Mortal Kombat game had a no violence option, like I could turn off the gore.
That's actually, you actually bring up a really good point, so you're not the only one to bring that up. And that's not something that should be really out of the realm for NetherRealm.
Realm.
Nice. Like you could turn off blood, turn off fatalities, right? Mm. And that's really easy to do. Like they could just not include it. So
just not include fatalities. That's right. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you're not standing there saying like they shouldn't have it. It's just saying like, you know, if they didn't have it, I would probably like it more. And that's very understandable. Like these sorts of games, like because they're so over the top, they are clearly not for everyone. Like they really aren't. And that's, I mean, I say that about every game, but in this case, I'd say it's not for everyone because some people would definitely find that squeamish. Doesn't mean that the person's wrong or bad. It just means that like, well, that game really isn't for you because the game, I guess, has always prided itself on that. If it wasn't for the first Mortal Kombat, there probably wouldn't have been that introduction of the age rating. That's what actually kicked it off.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just kind of how things are.
Yeah. I don't know how it would work in practice, though, because, I mean, if you I'm playing Mortal Kombat 11. I'm assuming that there's online play, and yes. If one person wants the gore on and one person wants the gore off,
yep.
They could just flash a crying koala picture on the screen while it happens.
And also, play, like, yeah. You know, would they decide to turn the gore on
they
or
could
off?
Turn the X-ray camera off for a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah, so there are things like that they could do. I mean, one. So I think
previous generations where you're not taking it online and people are not playing their own sort of things. Like if you're couch co-op, but you know, couch competitive, you could have more governance over that. Well, but now with the online play thing, yeah.
Yeah, no. But you think about it this way, because the display of gore in Mortal Kombat it's the blood, right? Which you could on your screen just not display the blood while the other person's screen displays the blood.
Go on, and then with style and turn into sweat.
With the X-ray thing, just turn off the X-ray. And then for fatalities, right? Because when you actually go into fatality, it just goes into a cutscene. Like you could just have that cutscene for the person who turned it off just go into a generic thing. Like
easily,
something else.
Easily,
because it's the fatalities is such a sort of it's like the end of the match. It doesn't have any impact on the match anymore, and then it's just a cutscene. If you get the button presses right, you just have something else that comes in for that cutscene. You could do it, and
it would show, you know, kind of the player, the fan base that we want to make it more open for other people, especially people who don't want to be seeing all the psh, psh, psh. But yeah.
Yeah,
no,
and
I have read
one of the things that that complicates my feelings about it a little bit more about MK11 specifically is there have been over the past week or so some stories about the developers having some difficulties with the material, them being the ones developing it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit 50-50 on that. If you sign up to NetherRealm Studios and you're a graphical artist for a Mortal Kombat game.
Dude, you're a graphical artist in the video games industry looking for work.
Yeah, that's the thing.
See,
if you're looking for work, you
know
what you're
doing.
I know a graphical artist who worked at 2K Studios, and he had to, when 2K shut down here in Australia, he had to move to go get more work because you're right, there's absolutely no work. That being said, very talented guy, and he's employed to do it. So he doesn't really get to decide the games that he works on as well.
There's
side of the coin as well. That's why I said I'm 50-50 on it, where it's just like, yeah, I know you're desperate for work, but like, honestly, is any amount of work going to be worth trauma? Because I'll tell you now, I would not do my job as a DBA if it was like, no, I have to see shit that I hate seeing
You live in Australia, though. We have a much bigger safety net. Like, there's shit that's going on in America if you don't have work. And if you, like, have a wife and kids and people depending on you, then, yeah, you would probably suffer that shit.
So that sort of, like I said, I just wanted to just put it out there that, you know, that further complicates my approach to MK11, and hence, therefore, you know, stick with Injustice 2.
Cool. Let's take a
Which
break
is also a good
Injustice.
Game, by the way.
Which is also very good. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good game.
Yeah, let's go play some now. I'm going to make my second segue into the music. Everybody get a Done. Drink. Tea, beer, water, whatever. Hey, coming on. Hey, coming on. So I learned something today. Apparently, in like the mid 1980s, 1986 to be precise, on July the 20th, Nintendo released Super Mario Bros. Peachahime Kyushutsu Daisakusen in Japanese theaters. Which, as far as I can tell, is the first video game movie. It's maybe telling that there is literally no information about how much it ever grossed.
No, does it exist?
apparently they produced a soundtrack and it was like 50 copies, so they went all in on the rarity thing.
Oh, was the one where Luigi was wearing blue.
Yep, he's wearing blue.
Oh god, why? First video game movie F up.
So that's where it all started, and I haven't seen it, but just looking at the poster art, it probably set the tone for what was to follow in the 90s. Because if we're going to be going into video game movies here, and if it appropriately starts again, at least on the Hollywood side of things, in 1993 with Super Mario Brothers, what the fuck were they thinking?
I could tell you a little bit of background about that, but can I talk about that movie right now?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Please do.
So that movie was a completely different script, and it was such a rubbish script that they went, hang on. We need to put some star power behind this. What's powerful at the moment? Oh, Super Mario Brothers. And that's why the story makes absolutely no sense. They literally just replaced some characters with Mario and tweaked a couple of the points in the movie, and then it became the movie it is. That's why it makes no real big actual references to the video game itself or any of the quote-unquote lore of Super Mario Brothers at the time.
So that's basically like what they did with Super Mario Brothers 2, is basically Mario over the top of another game, and they did the same thing with the effing movie.
Correct. 100% yeah. What they did. Yep. Yeah.
It does explain the thing I like about $21 million box office worldwide, which, I mean, for me, that sounds like a lot of money, but for something that big, that seems like it tanked.
It's a flop. That's a flop. Flop it right out.
I think 10. I don't know. I think everybody was excited about it. Like, legitimately excited.
Yeah, I remember. Like, I was aware of it, and I was never aware of movies before they came out, like, in the early 90s.
A lot of people expected, like, that was actually one of the first times, like, everyone's really hyped, like, because everyone, like, oh, video game movie is, like, you know, the first one. And then it came out, it's like, that's rubbish. And then no one saw it. I'm like, well, there you go. So movies have been flopping for a long time now.
Yeah.
And
there are a couple
Mortal Kombat
really
pulled
like
in 120 million. Like, things got better.
Can I talk about Mortal Kombat? So this is actually, I've got actually a list of movies that I genuinely think. I'm so sorry, but there's about three movies that were video game movies that I actually think are good movies. Mortal Kombat, I will die on that hill telling everyone that, like, no, it is a good movie. I will sit down and watch it with you and tell you why it's good. It's
please
good.
Get
it's...
you and Jaikal in the same room.
Wait, does he hate it or does he like it?
Jaikal's just the most art housey serious film critic person I thought of. At the beginning, okay. I do not think the chances of him liking Mortal Kombat are very high.
Yeah, that's interesting. So before you go on to your number two and number three, Adam, like, they were legitimately showing Mortal Kombat Annihilation on TV a couple of nights ago.
No, that movie is... Have you ever seen a movie?
That movie is
terrible.
It's not it that is
a,
bad.
It is a dog. That movie is so bad. It makes me mad. It's not even good that it's enjoyable, Ken. That is
no. It's gone into the good bad territory, like the bad good territory. Like it's so bad.
I need to be drunk if I watch that again. Sad when I watched it because I was such a fan of the first one. Then that came out.
I think there is enough time. Because Annihilation came out in 1997. That enough time has passed between that and now that is just so camp and so outrageously bad that it's like.
Does it have Kylie Minogue? Because I feel like Street Fighter kind of wins the camp, dumb fighting.
No. This is ridiculous. Yeah. Like this is legit ridiculous. One, they had a different actor for Raiden. They had some type of
green. He cut his hair halfway through. He cut his hair because, of course, they did. And they're like, at one point, Shao Kahn, I'm not freaking kidding you. At one point, Shao Kahn is talking to Shiva or some an elder god or some shit. Made no bloody sense. And she walks into his throne. His throne is up these stairs and he's sitting in his throne like, I am Shao Kahn. Now, this elder god walks in and she says something. He stands up, does a forward flip to land in front of her to just continue the conversation. No reason. He just thought, you know, now's the time to do a forward flip. I'm like, what the effing F? Like,
that's exactly what you want to watch a kung fu movie for, though. There doesn't need to be a reason for this shit.
If you can do a forward flip off a sitting position, you will do a forward flip. If you could do a forward flip right now, Adam, you'd be doing one right now.
I love you, Ken.
You'd be like, you wouldn't be walking down the stairs. You'd be like forward flipping, like down.
So I think the reason that I don't like it so much, and this is like, because I actually do like you, Ken. I really enjoy movies that are so bad that they're good. And there was when I wanted to talk about tonight was like, I have a list, and it's a very short list of movies that I say, no, these are good movies, and you should watch them. Because they stay true to the video game and they're entertaining. Versus, here is about six movies that I say, they are so bad, they are amazing, and you should watch them. And believe it or not, the Street Fighter movie, I just bought that on Blu-ray, and I watched it again. It is so bad, it's good.
Why would you buy it on Blu-ray?
Because it's like $12. You guys haven't seen my movie collection. It's massive, yeah. But it was like, it's so bad, because it's just bad, but it's so entertaining.
Yeah, because I would be willing to put money on the prospect of that Blu-ray is just a DVD rip put onto a Blu-ray disc.
You wasted $4, mate. You missed a cup of coffee.
Because I didn't have a copy already, so I was just like, $12 and 20% off JB, done.
Weird guilty thing from that. But you know what is actually quite entertaining to watch is the Street Fighter 2 animated movie.
Oh, brilliant!
Is actually
that's good.
10 out of 10, man.
It understands that Street Fighter is about kicking people in the face and eventually throwing a fireball.
It is so good. It is really good. Like, and I'm not. Anyone listening right now, if you're wondering what the hell that is, like, yeah, Japan makes good anime, and they made Street Fighter 2 the anime phenomenal. I've watched that about 20 times. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Like, if you even remotely like Street Fighter, go watch that. It's so
also
good.
Weirdly, Silverchair did half the soundtrack.
Yes, they did. Wasn't that weird, though? Right, it was weird.
the thing with like video game movies as a whole, like there are ones that try to stay too true to the source material, and then there are the ones that just don't give a shit, right?
There's a lot of those.
Yeah, and you know, talking about Street Fighter just makes me annoyed. Well, not annoyed, but the best Street Fighter. Well, it's not really a movie, but Street Fighter Legacy, that YouTube series.
That was if you watch that all. I bought the DVD for that because I saw it. I was like, no,
it cuts together as a movie. Yeah,
and do you have any self restraint? Just out of curiosity,
guys, come on, you should know me by now. You know, look behind me here. Does it look like I have self-restraint? No,
but that
I
is
do
a
not.
Legitimately, that is a legitimately good, I think, legitimately good show. That
it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, that respects the source material, but doesn't feel like it has to be, exactly like, make sure that everybody looks exactly the same as they do in the show. It's two kids with a red and a white gi, and they are trained by somebody as a father figure, and that father figure has a troubled history with a rival. Like it's just that's it. That's the central theme and the you know, respect the source material. And I really, really liked Legacy.
I think you and I are a bit of you and I are somewhat twins when it comes to like movies, Ken, you and I. I think we would both enjoy the same movies because I absolutely agree. That movie was we'll call it a movie if you tie it all together. Like you pointed out, it's like it respects the lore, actually has good acting, has a plot, and puts it together and you can watch it in an hour and a half. So that's why I think it's a movie. I watched that with a buddy. He's just for record, he's a professional MMA fighter. And I brought him around one day. I said, we're watching this. I said, because I know you like video games and he likes Street Fighter. We watched it. When we finished, he looked, he's like, he stood up and said, oh, I want to learn how to throw a fireball now. Goddamn, I want to do Hadouken. I was just like, yeah, it was so good. Like, we really enjoyed it. It was a good series. Needed a bigger budget.
Yeah. So, you know, but then again, coming back to Annihilation is actually kind of fun. Was actually legitimately kind of fun. Another one that I like, and the whole series actually, I liked how crazy it went and completely separated from the original source material to create its own sort of parallel lore. Resident Evil.
That was good. That was actually in my movies of like, you know, the first Resident Evil. Ignore the next six because what the hell?
I will happily watch any of the six after.
Oh, I couldn't. I can't. It's
I watched Extinction a lot because I got given a free Blu-ray, and that was back when Blu-rays were like $50 each.
Oh, what did you think of it then? Tell us.
It looked pretty.
It looked pretty.
What I was watching it for.
Okay, let's be very fair.
I can't afford to buy another movie. These things are.
Did you know the motivations? What was going on? You probably understood all that, right?
They were in the desert. Somebody got shot. There's a guy who could shake cans and tell if it was dog food or pork and beans. I don't know.
Yep, there you go. So it's the plots are very easy to follow, but like in terms of how much revenue, the Resident Evil movie, the first one, and then the subsequent ones, they made so much money that they could just keep on making them. So that was one of the most highly grossing films of all time. You guys probably have the wiki page open as well. Yes. The highest one, though, is actually just a recent one, and it's still going up, of course, and that's Detective Pikachu.
Seeing that tomorrow.
I can't wait to see that. But I really can't, actually. That's looked good. Like, I think that's going to be the highest because before that, Assassin's Creed was. And to no surprise to anyone, or maybe a surprise, World of Warcraft.
That actually does surprise me because I thought Tomb Raider would be higher.
China like love World of Warcraft.
Ooh, so of course.
When that hit their cinemas, they just went like, "We're all going to see it," and it just made so much money. They went like, "Oh shit, we can do a sequel now." I'm like, "Damn it, God, I mean, damn it!"
I literally just have the Wikipedia numbers go off here, but like, remember that Rampage is based on a video game? Remember Rampage is a thing?
So
that's chomping at the heels of Warcraft.
We know that that made more money because it had The Rock in it. And that's not a bad thing.
Having The Rock will make your movie perceptibly better.
Yes, he is the most highly paid actor in Hollywood at the moment. The second highest paid actor is Jennifer Lawrence. And the reason for it is because no matter what movie you throw them in, you know it will make money. And that's the whole thing about getting paid as an actor. It's like, how much am I going to sell? And they go, The Rock, everyone loves you. We are putting you in this and we will give you $28 million. They go, Jennifer Lawrence, everyone loves you. We are going to pay you $25 million to be in my movie. And we know that that's not all they're getting. They're getting a cut of the revenue. So they make $1 billion on box office and they're like, yeah, we've got 2% of that. And you're like, shit, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
and by all reports, like Rampage wasn't bad. Like
It was a fun movie.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on Netflix at the moment.
I bet it's a totally fine, serviceable Sunday afternoon action movie.
Yes. Absolutely. I got to talk about like some of the other movies. Like one of my favorite movies of all time. And look, the caveat here, everyone, is that I am an utter fanboy, and so take this with a bucket
of
salt.
Big caveat.
It's a big caveat.
Encrusted caveat.
The first Tomb Raider was actually pretty good. Eventually, but this one was Final Fantasy VII: Advent Children. So completely.
I hate that movie.
I still need to see it.
That movie so much.
No, you don't.
Okay, I don't then.
Yes, you do. Do you like Final Fantasy 7?
Yeah. I like Final Fantasy 7. I hate every single thing that Square Enix has done with that franchise since the game actually came out.
Breathe.
All of the interesting stuff from those games was just like sucked out of it. All the characters did was just like mope around. Cloud would like have sad face and look at his phone. None of the characters had a sense of weight in their animation. Nobody told the directors that there are actual rules for ways you put the camera and you don't just put it anywhere just because it's a 3D animated film and you can. That film is a hot piece of garbage that I was super looking forward to seeing.
And it's 10 out of 10 for my books. I love it. I love it so much. I like, no joke, the scene at the end where they're all kind of like, you know, they're like, Cloud's like, you know, kind of like dying or whatever, but he's not. And then like, you know,
I don't need to see it now.
Aerith,
no, you don't.
Aerith and that, they're just like, you know, they're saying goodbye and all that, and then they're all kind of like all standing there. It's like, you know, it's like the fan service shot of all the characters. A little bit of tear came out. I'm just like, oh, I love this. This is like, you need to understand how much I love Final Fantasy VII. I was never into JRPGs. Final Fantasy VII came out and I didn't play it. And then eventually I got a secondhand PS1. I went like, you know what? My friend was always telling me this is a good game. I played it. It took me about 24, 26 hours to get through. Completed that
not
game.
Not very long for that game at all.
No, so that's very short.
I have recompleted this game 3 more times, and one of them was 100%. So I have not really put that much time in any game. Overwatch, yes. But I can't tell you just how much I'd love that game enough to play through the story that many times. What a game. What a game. I just love the characters. I love the lore. It's like every time I play through it, I just realize something new about what's going on because it's so obscure. It's a JRPG, right? It's like, you know, you have to go online to find out half this shit. It's like, oh, you know he was a clone, right? It's like, what? Like, yeah, he was a clone. So how did they... Oh, I get it now. And that's his link.
I think that's partly the fact that the translation in that game is really bad.
Is really bad, yeah.
That's some of the allure to me. So, like, when I watched Advent Children, I wanted to know... Like, the only thing is, I wanted to know what happened after that.
I wanted to know why they spent 90%... I'm exaggerating, but why they spent 90% of that movie just jumping up at a friggin' summon. Like, so much of that movie was just flying
around. I want to know why they could make that, and then you had Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which made no sense. Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, if you took Final Fantasy out of it,
it's just a boring movie.
It's like a B movie. You could get through it, see it once, whatever.
It's a very expensive B movie.
That was its only fault, too. Like, that was very ambitious to have a CG movie like that to that level, because before that everyone, like even psychologists, and I remember speaking to one saying like, the reason you didn't like that movie, Adam, is because your brain knows it's a CG character and therefore you can't feel emotion with that. And then fast forward 15 years, what absolute fucking horseshit that is. Like, seriously, like, up your ass, just throw your books in the fire, because I have cried in anime. I don't cry in movies.
There's a big difference to why that works. So the whole silicon... I've forgotten the word when they're
Silicon
trying
Valley.
To be more real,
we're
it's
helping.
A lot harder.
It's cool.
But like that movie, like the reason it failed, you're right, it's like Sarah nailed it. It's because what does it really have to do with Final Fantasy? Not anything. It really wasn't Final Fantasy.
But they tried to get some of the themes in, kind of the whole institutional versus, you know,
they had a pillar of light
kind
coming
of
down
spirit and environment. They had some thematic stuff, but it was so paper thin compared to what you get in some of the games.
They had
that just,
most JRPG us plot imaginable, which is we have 6 things that we need to collect in order to save / destroy the world.
It really was.
Yeah, and Avengers did it better.
We can talk about that. We won't talk about that now, but God.
I'll tell me from 25 years ago to wait for that one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at like some of the movies that were so bad that they were good, and some of them are just like, they just still kind of make me a little mad, but like, let's just think of the ones that are just entertaining. Like, if you guys like want to have like a bunch of friends come over, drink a bunch of drinks, and you know, just chill and watch a movie that you can laugh at, there's some gold in here. Like Double Dragon, gold. Like gold. Get drunk, watch it. It is absolute gold. Like, goddamn, that is a funny movie. Like, because it's so stupid and campy, it's absolutely brilliant. Like, I'm not gonna die on that hill, but.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And the Tekken movie.
I got enjoyment out of that Tekken movie. I also got disproportionately mad when he paid a lot of money for coffee that the guy had been sitting on for 10 years and had already been ground. And I'm like, going, that has got to be moldy as shit. Followed by, why am I overthinking the coffee element in this?
Well, you know, actually, something that's probably not listed on your list there is that they did a CGI Tekken movie. I think it was called Blood Vengeance or it was something like that. But like, because it was like made by like this pseudo anime place, everyone's thinking like, oh, they're going to do a really good job of this. And no, they did not. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
An anime from the 90s that was really bad. Not even Boxing Kangaroo could save it.
Yeah, I watched that. Oh my God.
Yeah. It was really bad.
Wasn't it bad? And that was like when I was expecting so much more. The CGI movie, I think the most thing that made me actually mad, like things make me mad in movies, then something that made me mad in that is like at the end, Jin is talking to the whoever the main chick is with the panda bear thing. He was saying like, oh, like, you know, they just fought together to defeat the big evil and they defeated the big evil. And it's like, hey, high five moment. And then he's just like, it turns out he's like, yes, I know you want to kill me eventually. But I'm like, oh, what? Like, where the fuck did this come from? Like, you're just putting this in now? Like, you knew? What? At what point was this motivation even clear? Like, she's not going to kill anything. And like, I know at one point you want to come and kill me. I'm just like, right. Okay. Continue. Although, don't continue. I'm glad the movie's over because this has been a hot mess up until this point.
You can always turn the movie off.
You can.
Socially, you can't always walk out of a cinema.
Yeah. Have you ever done that? Walked out of a cinema?
I fell asleep in the cinema quite just during The Last Airbender. I just straight up said, I don't care. I'm tired. I don't like this movie.
I walked out of Mummy 3, the one with Jet Li in it.
Oh God! Yeah, so yeah. It wasn't very good.
That was really bad. Looking at, there is one video game movie that I'm disappointed by.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get to the big disappointments.
Go, man.
Max Payne.
I haven't seen it. It looked terrible. Had Marky Mark in it.
That's disappointment number one. But it was legitimately, I thought, like, if they had just leaned into, well, it was trying to do a few things, right? It was trying to be, how do you say this? Like, the game obviously was inspired by sort of like film noir.
It was Noir Matrix.
Noir Matrix, right? And then the game was Noir Matrix, and it obviously was, you know, taking a lot of its cues from film noir, and then the film was taking its cues from the game, which was taking its cues from a movie genre. So it was a really weird noir film that where it's drawing all its lessons like half baked across two different mediums.
Yep.
So by the time it actually translated to the movie, it was like, you're kind of not hitting the right notes. Like, you quite don't quite understand, like,
what one, you want to be.
Yeah, what you want to be. And you have this opportunity to actually call back to the original genre of film noir and actually write and be really interesting and be that sort of like, because there was a vocabulary, established vocabulary that you could have drawn from, but instead it's twice translated through two different mediums, and so it ended up being this weird thing. And also Mark Wahlberg didn't really help.
You know, I feel the same way about World of Warcraft, where I just felt like the actors and the tone of the movie seemed to shift, and they just seemed to like, it's, I don't like to pin everything down on an actor, but there were certain actors in certain roles in that movie where I was like, really? That was your number one choice for that role? Like, you didn't do it? Like, did he owe you a favor or something?
Did they get their number one choice for any of these roles, though?
I don't know. It's a mystery. Well,
I'm not sure about Warcraft, but surely you would think, like, 2008, Mark Wahlberg was, he was still...
He's still good. Yeah, he can act, but, like, he doesn't seem to... anything where you put him in like a dire, like, he's very good at like the being serious, but it's a comedy movie. I feel like that's where he really shines.
Yes, yes, yes.
Actually, fuck. You know what? I say that, and you know the movie with Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg, The Fighter, I think it was called. That was actually really good. No, look, go see.
Blinking.
But he was very good in The Big Hit.
There you go. Yeah. So like he's, I don't know. He just seems, I don't know if it's the director that can kind of bring him out of it, because you can't always pin it down on an actor. It's just like, look, good actor, bad script, bad director, a bit of both, one or the other. Like sometimes you can, as an actor, they can only work with what they're being given, which is why I'm always hesitant to just like pay out an actor. But in that case, like I kind of feel like you're right. Like see, it's maybe they should fix something else.
Yeah, the problem with Max Payne was that, you know, the main character, Max, is the sort of like down on his luck, always frowning, always looking grim type of character. Right?
Addicted to morphine, painkillers.
Yeah, yeah. And because Mark Wahlberg by that time had played so many sort of parodies of that type of character, when you see him in – when you see him trying to take it seriously, it's like, are you though –
I'm waiting for you to look at the camera and give a wink.
Yeah. Kind of like,
you're like, I don't know, really? Are we there? I don't know.
Like, are you trying to be like, are you frowning for real, or are you frowning because it's kind of like what your sort of the meta is expecting you to do? Yeah, so in any case, Max Payne was a huge disappointment.
All right, I'm going to throw my disappointment case as simply Prince of Persia Sands of Time. Game I loved, trailers looked okay, had money behind it. I was like, yeah, I could do some swashbuckling sand sword stuff. And it was just the most disjointed, unfocused thing.
It was terrible.
I think I've ever seen.
It was like, oh. Like one of those movies like... Oh, yeah. I see where you're going with that. No.
Pulled in $300 million, though. Like, it you could make good trailers with that footage. Like, it did, like, preview impressively.
They made money on it. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, and I know this is very cynical of me to say, but, you know, you can have your best intentions as a writer, your best intentions as an actor, director, whatever. When you have to get literally 1,000 people working together to produce a movie, at the end of the day, the people who are funding it only give a shit about one thing, and that's how much money am I getting to turn my investment. Yeah. If I'm investing $100 million, I want, you know, double that back. Otherwise, I've lost money.
You know, I'm going to suggest that they also sometimes see themselves as artists, because I cannot think of a single other reason how that Sonic the Hedgehog character design got through. I promise you, nobody on the design of the animation team came up with that and thought it was a good idea. Somebody chomping on a cigar was like, going, I think this is cool and that's what we're going to use.
I think he should just have white hands.
It's just white hands.
I think that's important.
He's fast, right? Let him say he's got to go fast. Those kids will freaking love it. Doing it like a line of coke off his like CDs.
And now thanks to that, and I am completely convinced that it was not the animators or like actual designers that like put that through. They all got to work overtime probably for the next 4 months.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I actually thought about that too. Like, because I don't know. Someone said it, and now everyone's run with it like it's fact. And I'm like, look, there's no doubt that if they have to go back and reinvent all this stuff and reanimate it, that like people are going to have to be working a lot. We don't know if they're going to be working overtime. But on the other hand, I'm like, okay, so they've done the job, they've been paid, the movie's in production, the editing part, which is like, you know, it takes about a year. So they've gotten to that part, they've released the trailer, the trailer has bombed, now they have to go back and because these animators are going to work for free, so they're going to have to go back and pay them again to go back and...
They wouldn't necessarily pay the same animators. They could go to any compositing company and say, we need you to fix this up.
There's going
to
be some crunch ass hours happening.
Yeah,
and the worst thing is like the writing, like when those first posters dropped, everybody was saying this design is, you have one of the best character designs in modern history.
Yeah.
Like, say what you will about Sonic's games, like, lately, it is a fantastic character design.
Yeah, he is.
And
I still like
they
it.
Just... Yeah. And what the hell? No one's going to buy a t-shirt
Is the choice to make it, like, I guess, you know, Detective Pikachu, it works.
But there's a whole cohesive world
it within the context of kind
and
of, like,
mice
a very...
actually have fur.
Yeah, but basing Sonic the Hedgehog in a real kind of, you know, whatever bumpkin American town where he's been hiding, who the devil knows, it doesn't seem to work there compared to Detective Pikachu, where it does seem to work.
Also, just from the character design perspective, Pikachu's silhouette survives.
Mm.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, we can compare it to Detective Pikachu, but when we look at Pikachu as the CGI model, it still looks like Pikachu. Whereas I look at the Sonic one, I go like, look, his. I look at it and go like, that doesn't really look much like Sonic. Here's the thing: I probably would have taken my son to go see it because A, I really love Jim Carrey. That guy's, if anything, that guy's going to carry the film, and we all know it. And it just looks like a fun kids' film. And that's maybe the other takeaway, where I feel like the target audience, we can sit here as adults and criticize it, and rightly so. Like, you should be absolutely right in your seat to criticize it, because it's very – we can criticize the shit
kids
out of this.
Kids are not going to get behind that character design is the thing. But they might not. That's the reason they're redoing it, is they,
well, they might
realize
not.
They won't. And the reason they're redoing it is not because people had a tantrum online. It's because they've realized, oh, this is not going to make enough money. We are not going to sell merchandise with this character design.
So they're taking the gamble to rehire and to redo it with the hope that they're going to offset the cost of doing that. I agree with you. It's being pitched as a – it is totally pitched as a kids' movie. It totally is, and I get that. And I also get – The issue with the video game movies and taking them into box office is there's pressure to market it to children. There is pressure to sit and be accepting of the fan base that has certain expectations, and the demographic of that is effing wide. You know?
And like, a lot of these characters. Is a lot of the fan base are the ones who decide what movies their kids go to see at the cinema. Which is probably also
spot on. No. Not necessarily. You take your kid to the freaking movie because you want them to shut the hell up for 2 hours. You don't care what they're seeing.
I took my son to go see the new Dragons movie, How to Train Your Dragon, because I'd seen them a million times by now, but I knew that he was a big fan. So we took him to that. And my my wife just took him to go see the Detective Pikachu movie because I grew up with Pokemon. I love it. And so did she. And now he's grown up with Pokemon. That's how old that thing is. He loves it. So they went to go see that. But, like, you're absolutely right. It's like they have meetings with this. They do market research. This is not new. And they say, what's our target audience? And our target audience is probably people who grew up with Sonic.
It's a family movie as well.
Yeah. So it's like it needs to – they say, like, the gold mine for any movie is to appeal to people like me, 37, who is in the medium age, and to appeal all the way down to, like, you know, sub 10, like, kids. And they say, if everyone loves it, then that's great. And unfortunately, all the people like my age looked at that and said, like, what the hell, that looks rubbish. That being said, I have seen parents and all that show their kids the trailers, and they're like, oh yeah, that looks all right. It's like they're not really excited to see it. But you're right, Tim, where you say, like, the people deciding who to go sees that movie, it's the parents.
Yeah.
And the parents are looking at it going, like, you know, I grew up with Sonic and that looks shit. I'm not going to go see it. Therefore, that's your money gone. So they know that they have to go back and pay some new animators to go back and redesign things. And whoever decided on that original design, it wasn't the animators. We know this. It's always the people who are sitting behind them saying, like, I want this and I want this and I want this. Market research shows blah. And then they say, design it like that. Like, those people probably lost their friggin' jobs. Let's be honest. They just cost,
or
like,
or they got a $20 million bonus. It could swing both ways.
It's like, if I think about people funding movies, it's people who don't give a shit about movies. They just have money. And they fund the movies. And the thing that they hate is when movies, like, tank. So we can think about a lot of movies that have done that, like our directors who will no longer be able to direct under a certain studio anymore because they fucked up, like their fuck up. And then they lost like maybe $50 million or something. They go, no, we are not investing in you anymore. It's a sad state of affairs, but it's also like that for actors. That's why you see actors rise and fall, where they just, like, come in. It's like at their height, like, great, 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 great. And then suddenly they're in, like, two tanks in a row. And they're like, well, I'm not going to invest, like, money. You will not sell my movie. I'm going to Jennifer Lawrence now. She is much better than you. Go away. Don't like
Tom
you
Cruise
anymore.
Tom Cruise keeps on getting work.
I don't know how.
You know why? Because if you've watched any of the last three Mission Impossible movies, they are utterly fantastic. That being said, Edge of Tomorrow, one of the best movies I've ever seen, didn't perform that well, but it still makes a profit. But it didn't perform that well. And that was, I think Emma Stone was also in that movie. That is a great movie, everyone. Go see it, because I'm not kidding. It was based off a book, which is virtually identical. Plots, obviously, they slightly changed it for the movie. But Edge of Tomorrow was fantastic. And I know a lot of people said, like, oh, I don't like Tom Cruise. I'm like, well, he dies like 50 times in that movie. So go see it. Go watch Tom Cruise die 50 times.
It's Emma Blunt, I think.
Oh, Blunt, thank you.
Yeah, it was Emma Blunt.
It's a weird case of a Hollywood movie based off a manga, I think.
You're absolutely right.
It's a manga, that's right. And it's one of those movies where it didn't do so well in the box office, but has lived on in the DVD and the rewatching.
Yeah.
Like The Root.
My kind of setting the bar for a Tom Cruise movie is I need to forget that it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's fine.
If it's Tom Cruise playing Tom Cruise, I don't consider it a decent movie. Well, Mission Impossible, I can, like...
They're really good. I'm not kidding.
You know, the whole disbelief thing.
They're really good movies. And, like, here's something else to take away with Tom Cruise. After the whole Me Too movement, which has busted a lot of producers, directors, actors... even some of the people who were involved in the Me Too movement have, like, later come out as like, oh, so you're having sex with a minor. Go, girl. That's awesome. We found out that Tom Cruise was not wrapped up in any of it. So, holy shit. There's some food for thought.
No, he's just crazy. Like, it doesn't mean he's evil.
He's mental. But, like, don't care about that. Like, you can be mental as long as you're not hurting people. You know, be mental. You're an actor. Like, that's
all right. We've gone a little bit off the train.
Oh my god,
Sarah. Something. I think we've all had a disappointing video game movie standout, except for you. You want to take us out?
Look, a lot of the video game movies that I've watched have been the ones that have been direct to video, and they're tying into a game that's coming out. So,
you're saying they're all disappointing?
No, I'm not saying that was disappointing. Like, the couple of BioWare ones, the one for Mass Effect and the one for Dragon Age Inquisition, where they had Cassandra Pendergast in it, were so. But when you get to kind of the purpose of those movies, and they served a purpose that kind of expanded on the lore and it did it really well. Kingsglaive Final Fantasy XV was there to basically bulk the lore that they couldn't be effed putting into the game. And that was something that disappointed me, because it was like, I didn't like it. I just didn't like that I had, in order for me to get the most out of a game, it was forcing me to watch this movie. And that's why I didn't like it.
It was very presumptuous. The attitude of that, I haven't seen it. The attitude behind that movie pisses me off more than the movie.
So for me, that's like, you know, yeah, look, you know, Super Mario and all this, those are, you know, the age that I saw them, I dealt with them. But at an age now where, you know, I can kind of be a little bit more picky, and a lot of the stuff that I'm watching is honestly on DVD because movie theaters, it's going to see movies now, not going to exactly happen. Kingsglaive
don't see movies anymore.
It like really frustrated me. On the flip side, the miniseries Brotherhood, I liked. Because it wasn't necessary, but it added flavor to the game. So those are the kind of movies with video game movies that I tend to go and watch. Ones that are kind of, you know, are they giving something extra to the game that I already enjoy, rather than just reestablishing the whole universe to a new audience.
I can see that.
Yeah. And then there's the Animal Crossing one that is somewhere online, and I really need to watch all that.
I didn't even know that exists. I also remember they made that Ratchet and Clank movie. And then we all forgot and just remembered that the game came out. It's a pretty good game, though.
And no one goes see Dead or Alive. That's not even fun to watch. Like,
dude, Dead or Alive was one of our podcast episode graphics.
It's so bad. It was just like... just cringe bad. Like, you know what I mean? Where it's just like... I'm not even going to go into it. It's so terrible. Everything about that movie was terrible.
Could have had Bikini. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I think we're just about to run this as dry as we sensibly can.
So for future people who are wanting to make video game movies,
yeah,
what is the key message that they get out of all this? Is it that
understand
it has to
the game and also have your own simultaneously have your own vision and probably at least respect the source material? Which is
you definitely need, yeah.
Detective Pikachu does not seem like it's great, but it seems fine. Like they made something competent and enjoyable.
It respects the source material. It's totally respected, and it's telling a new story. My advice would be like, you don't have to tell the story that the video game told, because guess what? That was a story being told that people liked, and it was also interactive, and it was also all these other things which your movie is not. So tell another story in that universe. And respect the material, and that's kind of all you need to do. Like, that's why it's like, if you look at a movie, you're not seeing, like, you know, these high 90%, you know, 85%, 100%. You're not seeing any of those. But you are seeing what I would say is competent movies.
Make a movie about Eve Online, and don't make it an actual movie. Make it a documentary about what the hell is going on in that community.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I would watch that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, that's clever. You should make a movie, Tim.
Sure,
make a movie.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, it's easy. Come on.
Ken.
If you bulk can do it.
Don't make a movie.
Don't make a movie. Make a video game instead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that sounded a bit trite and snide, but no.
I love it.
Coming back to, like I said, Street Fighter, it's not called Legacy, it's called Assassin's Fist, the whole series.
Yeah.
That was an effective way, I thought, of like, just because you can do a lot in just 3 or 4 minutes of video, and just to add that flavor. And, you know, it doesn't, not everything needs to be like 2-hour epics. Like, it's okay to make a story small and tight and personal, and not all movies have to be like about the end of the world.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that epic. It can just be a human story within
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or all games don't have to be about the end of the world either. Maybe they could make a comedy roommate buddy movie about Tetris.
They are.
The L-shaped block just can't
Tetris, the entire movie would disappear.
That would be awesome. Oh. Perfect. Well done. Well done, Sarah. Sarah's taking Ken's win away. Actually, on that note, we are going to wrap this thing up. So, Sarah, thank you very much for giving your time. You look almost as tired as I am. Maybe more so, and you're just better at hiding it.
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. The dark circles are always here, so like people are just used to it now. yeah, so thank you for having me on and stuff. And if you want to find anything that I'm writing, which is highly infrequent for obvious reasons at the moment, I'm on Twitter at Esoteric. And I do some writing and stuff for Player 2, which you can see every so often. Ta-da! Yes.
All right.
Thank you for listening to my TED Talk.
Excellent. And Adam, thank you for fighting with Ken about Mortal Kombat.
Oh, it was good. I like talking with Ken. We're it's like I always get something away from those discussions. I've always got time to listen to Ken's point of view because he's so goddamn articulate, and I just kind of like listen to him talk. I'm like, shit, I wish I could explain things like that guy. If you want to see my writing,
true, I do enrich your life.
You do, yeah, it's good. we need to have a beer again soon. So yeah, my writing, you'll see it on player2.net.au as well, like Sarah, and you'll also see some of my writings on Fandom. So go check those out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Garfield. That's GHARPHIELD, and you can catch me there.
And Ken, thank you for fighting with Adam about Mortal Kombat.
Well, you know, he's always wrong, so it's fine. It's easy.
Fatality.
Friendship.
Can we find you?
Babality. You can find me at Pixel Hunt. And I've got old stuff on the Player 2 website. Hopefully, I've got new stuff coming soon.
Man, one day I'm going to have new stuff. Oh, man, I've got a thing that I'm reviewing right now that this podcast is literally landing a day too early on in Parker. We're gonna have
you
some
can do it, buddy. You can do it.
Oh,
we believe in you.
My exam's actually finished tomorrow, so maybe that'll help, or maybe I'll fail and have to reset. Who knows?
Wow. Okay.
We believe in you.
You can do it,
that
man.
Always works. Believing in people is always a solution.
Because that's what video game movies have taught us.
We believe in them.
We believe in you.
So I'm going to die, and you guys are going to cry like a bunch of Pokemon. I'm going to come back to life.
That's a great place to wrap it up.
Totally.